Welcome to 10-5, the official podcast of the OPP Association. I am Scott Mills. My regular co-host, Josh Jutras, is on assignment this week. He'll be back next week. We are the Strategic Communications Coordinators for the OPP Association and your hosts for the 10-5 podcast, the official podcast of the OPP Association. And for those who are just joining us for the first time, the OPP Association is the sole bargaining agent for the close to 10,000 members of the Ontario Provincial Police in Canada. Our members are our focus and our strength. We aim to provide important information to our members on this podcast, as well as the public about matters that affect policing in the province of Ontario. Today's guest is from British Columbia. Welcome, Dr. Glenn J. Landry. He's the president and chief sleep officer of CRS Circadian Rhythms and Sleep Incorporated. We also have a special co-host guest who's no stranger to the 10-5 podcast. Social worker Carl Dalton is the CEO of Dalton Associates, who power our OPP Association Encompass Mental Health Wellness Program. Welcome to the 10-5 podcast in your co-hosting role, Carl, and welcome to the 10-5 podcast as our featured guest today, Dr. Landry.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot, Scott. It's great to be back.
Well, it's always great when we're talking about things that can help us be more healthy here. So if you want to learn how to regulate your life a little bit better to be healthy, you're listening to the right podcast. So right off the top, we're going to do a shameless self-promotion for our Encompass Mental Health Wellness Program, Mental Health and Awareness Communication Series that we do regularly on a monthly basis. And Dr. Landry is going to be our guest for three of those upcoming webinars. And the dates and times to mark on your calendars for those webinars are Wednesday, April 27th, 2002, at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That'll be for 75 minutes on a Zoom call. Wednesday, May 25th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is another 75-minute Zoom call. And Wednesday, June 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern Time is a 75-minute Zoom call. And please note that these three episodes are airing at different times than usual, with 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time start times. And they will be an hour and a half in length as opposed to an hour in length, because this topic of sleep is, as you're about to hear, is very important, and we really need to drive this home. So you can learn about all the dates and the topics to join those webinars where you actually get to ask questions and still remain anonymous. It's really awesome. And visit the Encompass website, which is encompasscare.ca, and Encompass is encompasscare.ca. And there's also an archive there of the YouTube videos of many of these sessions that are open for anyone to watch on a variety of mental health topics. And we ask that you check it out. So, Carl, we're going to turn the show over to you now for an introduction of Dr. Landry, and you will be our co-host. So take it away, Carl.
Thanks a lot, Scott, and that was a great introduction, and you know, certainly thanks a lot for the shameless plug, as you put it, for Dr. Landry's speaker series that Encompass has organized. You know, myself and the Encompass team, I really see ourselves in a place where, you know, part of our mandate is to bring resources to police officers and to the OPPA members, you know, and in return, you know, we see the OPPA members as really high performing people under incredible, distressful times. So we approach this topic of sleep with a lot of enthusiasm, and of course, you know, Encompass, we're not experts, but we go and we do our research and our networking to bring experts in relevant fields to the OPPA members. And so that's, you know, our team met with and has been working with Dr. Landry to bring his expertise in circadian rhythms to the membership. And that's exactly what's going to happen on those three dates that you set out, or 75 minutes each. And, you know, there'll be an opportunity to continue to work with Dr. Landry and his team as well beyond that. So, look, I guess, you know, I want to start with saying sleep is a key piece in all of our wellness, and that's something that I believe in. And in the role of policing, of course, in shift work, and Scott, you can attest to this much more than I can, is that shift work is not something within your control. It's part of the job. And adjusting to that, you know, and your family adjusting to that is, you know, a really key piece of your wellness. And when it's off, you know, the rest of the performance can be off, and the, you know, yourself and the family and the whole work environment can suffer. So, you know, Dr. Landry, I'll try not to talk too much during this. I think you know, we want you to inform us, but, I thought maybe you could just introduce circadian rhythms to start from us and your body of work, really your life work and expertise to us, and just give us a good understanding of what you're up to, you and your team there.
Oh, thanks for that, Carl. Let me first start just to, you know, reemphasize one of the points you made, which is that no matter who you are, we need to be getting great sleep. If you want to be elite in whichever domain that you've chosen for yourself, you need to first become an elite sleeper. Because sleep health status impacts every aspect of human health and performance. So this applies to all of us. And, you know, you mentioned circadian rhythms, and we've talked about that a little bit, a couple of times. Circadian rhythms are daily biological rhythms. You can think of it as we have daytime physiology, biology, and behavior, and we have nighttime physiology, biology, and behavior. And the key thing here is that those two things need to be kept separate in time, because they're incompatible processes. And the problem for shift workers is that their shift system requires them to turn their nights into days and their days into nights. And we know that that circadian dysregulation accelerates aging. In 2010, the World Health Organization determined, after a thorough review of the science, that shift work that causes circadian dysregulation, turning our nights into days and our days into nights, that actually causes cancer. And so there's a risk factor that's associated with just going about and doing your job as a shift worker. But the good news there is that there are things that we can do. The science has evolved to the point that we know how to take the circadian shift out of shift work. And so there are things that you need to do so that you can anchor your circadian rhythms to the day, even though you're working shift work at night. So that's really something that we're going to be covering in great detail in the three speaking sessions that we have for the 27th, May 25th, and June 22nd. So we'll be getting into the things that shift workers need to do to protect their circadian rhythms, to promote strong circadian regulation, and improve their overall sleep health while working a shift work paradigm.
That is a lot to take in, Dr. Landry, and turning my, you know, our days into nights and nights into days. And, you know, of course, the really only reference I have to that is parenting and raising small children. And so if I'll just maybe go to a little bit of, you know, maybe my own question, or maybe some myth debunking for you, is that, you know, we had a belief in my relationship anyway, that I am someone that doesn't need sleep, and my wife is someone that does need sleep, and I function much better without it, and the most, and so, you know, I could sacrifice that sleep. Now, is there any truth to that belief, or is that just a circumstantial, you know, thing we made up in the middle of the night?
It's certainly a myth. Thanks for the question. The notion, you know, we have busy lives. Let's first make this statement that we're all shift workers. And what I mean by that is that sleep is the first thing we sacrifice to meet the growing demands of work, family, and social life balance. And so we're adjusting our sleep schedule to fit whatever work, family, and social life balance requires. And that means that we're constantly, from night to night, week to week, shifting the times that we're going to bed and the times that we're getting up. And that actually results in circadian dysregulation. And especially over time, that sleep debt accumulates and it can have an impact. So we're all shift workers in that sense. And the notion that, you know, I'm way too busy, I'll sleep when I'm dead kind of attitude. Sleep deprivation is very often, you know, worn as a badge of honor. I'm strong enough that I can overcome. I've got a really strong work ethic and I can, you know, I can do whatever needs to be done and I'll catch up on sleep when I get the chance. The thing about that is that for a period of time, you can do that. Like, so that, you know, like all myths, there's a bit of truth to them. And what's happening there is the brain is able to compensate for a long period of time. So not getting the sleep that you actually need, you're still able to perform because your brain is compensating. But make no mistake, you're accumulating a sleep debt. We all need to get sleep. You know, world experts agree now that the general public requires somewhere between 7 and 9 hours of actual sleep on a nightly basis. And when we're not getting the sleep that we need, we're accumulating a sleep debt. And the issue for that is that sleep debt that you're accumulating, it's actually borrowing from the health and wealth of your retirement. And that's something that people don't realize is that their actions today play out later in life when you may not be as healthy as you once were in terms of things like obesity, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia. All of these are diseases of aging and they're all impacted by your sleep health status and they're all increased in terms of the risk and the rate at which you progress through these when you aren't getting the sleep you need as an adult.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on sleep debt? You know, it refers to, you know, in layman's terms, it's simply, you know, you owe yourself sleep. Is that right?
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity to elaborate there. So what I'm saying is that we have a basic need on a nightly basis, and you can put yourself somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 to 9 hours of actual sleep that you need each night to do all of the things that sleep really requires from us. So let's first talk about, you know, what sleep does. It does a host of things. So from the point that you get to sleep, you will, you know, hopefully if you're ready for sleep at that time, you're going to get into deep sleep. And the brain's like an engine. It produces exhaust and so does the rest of your body. In terms of brain health, we talk about these as metabolites, but quite literally, you can think of it as exhaust, and that exhaust accumulates around the neurons. And so if that exhaust is allowed to accumulate over time, and this is a decades-long process, but it will actually choke those neurons off, and then they become non-functional. So what you can say is that wakefulness, sustained wakefulness, is toxic. And one of the things that sleep does is it washes away the day's waste. So we need to get sleep every night in order for us to be able to wash away the day's waste. But that's not all that sleep does. It plays a huge role in terms of immune system functioning, growth and repair and restoration of neurons and tissues throughout the brain and body. It plays a role in consolidation of learning and memory, plays a role in building mental resilience and dealing with stressors and trauma. So there's a ton of things that happen in that 7 to 9 hours of actual sleep. And when you aren't getting the sleep that you need each night, if you're routinely getting, let's say, an hour short, and let's say that you're getting 6 hours of actual sleep instead of seven. Well, what's happening is you're accumulating a sleep debt, and that actually builds. You can think of it as a tsunami that builds beginning in the frontal cortex, and it's a wave that moves back the longer and longer you go with chronic sleep debt. And again, chronic sleep debt, it's just what I'm saying there is that it's nightly shortchanging yourself of that total sleep that you need. And I've mentioned a couple of times here that you need 7 to 9 hours of actual sleep each night. And I should explain what I mean by that. The amount of time that you spend in bed, let's call that the sleep window. Let's say that you go to bed at 11 and you get up at 7 in the morning. So that's an 8 hour sleep window. But for average people, you're not going to be sleeping that entire time. As a normal course of the sleep window, you're going to be waking up throughout the night. Now, hopefully those awakenings are brief, so you may not even be aware of them. But typically you can subtract about an hour from your sleep window. So if you're going to bed at 11 and getting up at 7, you're probably getting something in the neighborhood of 7 hours of actual sleep in that 8 hour sleep window. Now, what happens when you're going to bed at, say, midnight and getting up at 7? Well, then that's a 7 hour sleep window. So you're probably getting more like 6 hours of actual sleep. And that's what we mean when we're talking about chronic sleep debt. Epidemiological studies have shown for decades now that there is this decrease in the amount of sleep that the general public is getting society wide. And Fitbit data, aggregate Fitbit data on millions of users around the world, confirms that. We now have objective data showing that the average individual, even though they have roughly, let's call it just shy of an 8 hour sleep window, they're getting just over 6.5 hours of actual sleep. So the average individual is getting less sleep than they actually need.
The depth of your knowledge is really apparent here. And but I can sort of hear Scott thinking, because that's one of my abilities, is I can hear Scott's thoughts. So if I can hear Scott thinking, well, that's great. You know, like I'd love to go to sleep, but I've just worked a 12 or often, you know, maybe 14 hour shift. And, you know, I'd love to go home and just go to sleep, but I'm lying there awake all night. So if I have, you know, my body needs this so bad, why is it so hard to shut her down? And, you know, why can't I sleep?
Carl, you're hitting the nail on the head. You're hitting the nail on the head with that question. So there's a few factors here, right? And what you're really asking is, why can't I sleep? You know, this guy's on and he's telling me it's critical for me to get more sleep, and I'm in bed, but I'm not falling asleep. Or I can fall asleep because I'm exhausted, but I'm waking up about 2-3 hours later and I can't get back to sleep. So what do I do? The issues that you're talking about, this all comes back to circadian rhythms. And again, we're going to be talking about this a great deal in the sleep series that we're doing. But circadian rhythms, again, daily biological rhythms, daytime physiology, biology, and behavior, nighttime physiology, biology, and behavior, and they need to be kept separate. Well, the thing that's happening right now, if you recall, I had said that we're all shift workers. The reason that we're, one of the reasons that we're not able to get the sleep that we want is that our brain and our body needs to be prepared for sleep in advance of that sleep window. Think of it as anticipating the sleep window and then doing all of the physiological processes in preparation so that we can actually get the sleep. And what's happening is what we do during the day, as well as what we do at night when we can't sleep, is having a profound impact on our ability to get the sleep we need. And this is why, you know, I've been banging this drum for a long time, as you know, Carl. This is why we need sleep health training, because it's a skill that we can all acquire. We can protect our sleep. If we build a sleep window, protect that sleep window with what we do during the day as well as at night when we can't sleep, we have physiological processes. I like to call it the sleep accountant. And its job is to anticipate that sleep window, prepare us for sleep, and get us the sleep we need. But what's happening in society now is that we know that we got to, you know, I've got to get to bed early tonight because I've got a super early awakening. So I'm going to go to bed early. We lie awake. We can't fall asleep. Many of us will, you know, reach over to take a pill to try to help us get some sleep, or maybe we'll drink a little extra alcohol to try to get us to fall asleep. All of the things that we're doing, self-medicating, if you will, to try and get the sleep we know we need. And the issue is that physiologically, we're not getting physiologically healthy sleep. We're getting more what you would think of as pharmacological sleep. And pharmacological sleep is very different than the healthy sleep we actually need.
That's an important distinction between pharmacological for doing, you know, self-medicated sleep, I guess,
yeah,
or pharma sleep versus natural sleep. The rhythm that we're in, can you say a little bit more about those rhythms, just so that, you know, and that we can truly understand how those, you know, physical, emotional, and behavioral rhythms are in place, and maybe then maybe what keeping them separate means.
Yeah, thanks. So, let's talk about melatonin for a second. So melatonin, most people have heard of this, and some people are actually taking it because they hear that it's so important and that it helps you sleep. So melatonin is a hormone that prepares our brain and body for sleep. It prepares the brain for sleep by playing a role in turning off the wake-promoting areas of the brain and turning on the sleep-promoting areas of the brain. So that's really important. Another thing that melatonin does is it plays a role in beginning the cooling process for our core body temperature. And our best sleeps happen when our body temperature, core body temperature, has reached a peak and then begins a long decline to its lowest point. We call that the core body temperature minimum. And so melatonin plays a role in that cooling process. There's one more thing that, I mean, melatonin does a ton, but another thing that melatonin does, earlier in this talk, I mentioned that, you know, shift work that causes circadian dysregulation causes cancer. Well, melatonin's one of the mechanisms in which our risk is increased. And what I mean by that is that melatonin levels, they begin rising a couple of hours before our normal bedtime. And they continue to rise, and they reach, melatonin levels reach a peak about the midpoint of our sleep window, and then they begin declining again. And melatonin plays a critical role in the process of cancer fighting. So we produce cancer cells as a normal course of, you know, our daily lives, but we have mechanisms in place that identify the cancer cells, target those cancer cells for destruction, then destroy and remove the cancer cells. And melatonin plays a role in that process. And the thing is that shift workers are getting a ton of light at night, and light happens to turn off melatonin. So shift workers have less melatonin, and so cancer fighting is impaired. That's one of the mechanisms. And to be clear, I'm simplifying this right now, but it gives you an overall idea of circadian regulation. Nighttime physiology is high melatonin levels, and daytime physiology is low melatonin levels. There's one example. Nighttime physiology, core body temperature decreasing and reaching its lowest point a couple of hours before a normal wake up. There's another example. And then daytime physiology, our core body temperature continues to rise from that body temperature minimum through our day. And in the afternoon, we have a bit of a lull. That's an afternoon lull that most of us experience as fatigue. You can think of this as the fatigue you feel at 1 to 4 p.m. when, you know, you're dragging your butt a little bit. So you'll reach for coffee and other stimulants to help you get through that lull. And then body temperature after the lull begins rising again and continues rising to its peak just before our normal bedtime. So those are a couple of examples of circadian rhythms. And now when we talk about preparation for sleep and being ready for sleep, what we want is this rising of melatonin that plays a role in turning our brain, the wake-promoting areas of the brain off, and turning the the sleep promoting of the brain on and also cooling our body temperature. That's all part of this process of getting ready for sleep. And so when you have this experience that you know you're supposed to be in bed, you want to be able to fall asleep, but you can't stop thinking about the day, or you can't stop thinking about tomorrow and all the things that need to be done. Part of that is a lack of melatonin. You've got the wrong time to be going to bed. You need to actually, as I said earlier, build a sleep window, protect that sleep window so that your sleep accountant can fill it.
That's excellent. And I really appreciate that explanation. You know, it sounds like our bodies, our emotions, and our behaviors are going through what I guess maybe more of a natural processes than we've really, well, that you understand clearly and have a lot of insight into, but certainly someone like myself might take for granted in terms of what's happening in my body in terms of melatonin or in terms of body temperature. Where's my body at in the day of the processing? And certainly, you know, when we think about mental health and we think about our emotional state and our physical state, you know, we often use the term or the slogan on the team of, you know, fitness and mind and body. And I think, you know, this, we know in mental health that sleep deprivation, you know, you've touched on aging and cancer and other biological. We also know that there's a big, you know, connection to your mental health, to depression, anxiety, perhaps even the impact of stressful and traumatic events. And I know you've done a little bit of work in that area of mental health with first responders as well.
Yeah. I mean, that is an absolutely critical piece of the puzzle here. There is a bi-directional relationship between mental health and sleep health. You know, you can take a person that's a great sleeper and put them through trauma or whatever. And as their mental health declines, their sleep health will decline. So you could take somebody that's been a great sleeper, have them be depressed, and that will result in some very poor sleep. But the reverse is actually true as well. You could take a healthy person that's, you know, doing really well mentally, and then you put them through the stressors of, you know, life, and when chronic sleep debt accumulates, you could get them to the point where their sleep health is declined, and that actually triggers poor overall mental health. Let me give you an example of that. So I talked a little bit about how the brain's like an engine and it's producing exhaust. And I also mentioned that exhaust builds up in the frontal cortex first. And that part of the brain is really important, because you could think of that part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, as the CEO of the brain. Think of it as a brake pedal. It's you know, responsible for reason, logic, and decision-making and all of these important things. Think of it as controlling behavior. Now, we have a couple of gas pedals in the brain. One is, you know, our emotional center of the brain. I'm simplifying again, but you can think of that as the amygdala. And the emotional center of the brain is a gas pedal. Think of that as your emotional reactivity to your external environment and what's happening around you. When we're sleep deprived, it disconnects that brake pedal, the CEO of the brain, from the gas pedal that is our emotional reactivity. So anger management, or being excessively reactive to our environment, is a function of sleep debt, chronic sleep debt. There's another gas pedal that really matters, and that is our reward-seeking center of the brain. And again, I'm going to simplify, but that area of the brain, it is our adrenaline junkie, our seeking that excitement part of the brain. That's a gas pedal. And it's a key part in being able to evaluate risk versus reward, or cost versus benefit. And what we know is that when the brake pedal, the CEO of the brain, is disconnected from that reward center gas pedal, what happens is people have a tendency to overestimate the benefit of a given decision and underestimate the risk that's associated with that decision. So it changes our risk reward analysis. It changes who we are. We tend to become riskier, more emotionally reactive individuals. That is critical to understand, especially in a shift work, you know, paradigm where you have people that are chronically sleep deprived, because we go through all of the processes to train people, to give them standard operating procedures, to expect that they will do in stressful situations exactly what they're supposed to do. Think of it as situational awareness and being able to assess risk quickly. Well, what happens with sleep-deprived individuals is that they are altered. Their brain chemistry is altered. So they aren't who we trained them to be. And it's autonomic. It isn't their choice. It's a function of brain chemistry. And we really need to understand that. It alters who we are when we're not getting the sleep we need.
Yeah, that's really a powerful a thought, really. You know, I mean, I know we know it's science, and but really it's a powerful belief system to have, that saying that, you know, sleep is as crucial as food and water, and especially key if we want to perform the duties that we already are performing at a high level and want to maintain that. You know, look, I could go on for hours here, but I don't want to spoil the rest of your work and certainly the 3 75-minute sessions that we have coming up. You know, I know we just started to scratch the surface here, and I think that's where we'll leave it, because I want to, you know, leave time. Scott, I'm not sure if you have any other questions or thoughts on this, but I want to leave, you know, I don't want to be a spoiler here of our next 3 sessions. And I think the work you're doing is incredible, Dr. Landry, and we look forward to bringing it. So Scott, I'll turn over to you if you have any final questions there.
Well, thanks. So just listening to this, you know, as a 30-year cop myself, and having, you know, gone through the first 29 years of it or so with sleep issues, and having, you know, got onto a CPAP machine myself and things like that. And as a cop, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, what can I do to fix this? And how much is this going to cost me? Who do I have to see? What doctors and stuff like that? So I can tell you that I'm going to be tuning in at 1 p.m. on the last Wednesday of April, the last Wednesday of May, and the last Wednesday of June 2022. Onto those webinars, because I'm going to be asking Dr. Landry those questions. And if you think that that sleep is an issue for you, I really encourage you to go to the website encompasscare.ca. There's not 2 S's in Encompass Care, it's just 1 S, encompasscare.ca, and sign up for those webinars. They're free. And I really want to thank Dr. Landry for taking time out of his schedule to do this podcast with us, and to Carl for taking the time out of your schedule for doing the podcast, and Louise Hansen at Dalton there, thank you for helping us arrange all this, and it's very important, and it's been a pleasure to have you both on the show today here. And so on behalf of the OPP Association, thank you, Dr. Glenn Landry, for joining us all the way from British Columbia today. CEO of Dalton Associates, social worker Carl Dalton, thank you for joining us from Fergus, Ontario today. And we appreciate your insight.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. This is my life's work. So anytime I get the opportunity to share the information and translate the science, it's a real thrill for me.
Yeah, likewise, I'm happy to be here. And Dr. Landry, I think, you know, we often think of as shift work and sleep as sort of out of our control or something that's very challenging to control. And you've got a method here of where we really can build in a sleep window. And even within, shift work, or as you say, we're all shift workers, but certainly within the, in the context of policing, that there is control that we can exercise here and make improvements to our own wellness in systems that we think are outside of our control. And I think that's a, you know, really key piece that you're going to bring to our group here. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, my pleasure. Listen, I just want to emphasize that I wouldn't be on the podcast telling people they need to get sleep if there weren't solutions that are available. And the key point there is the notion that I do shift work, so it's the shift work that's causing the problem and there's nothing I can do about it. There are things we can do, and in fact, we'll be talking about those things. So please do tune in to the series.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Landry. Thank you, Carl. You have been listening to the 10-5, the official podcast of the OPP Association. And if you like what you hear, please share that all of the episodes can be found on our blog at oppa.ca/media. We've got over 40 episodes up there now of podcasts, and our podcast is available on all the major podcasting platforms, including Google, Apple, Spotify. Be sure to hit the subscribe button to never miss an episode. On behalf of Josh Dutras, this is Scott Mills, and until next Friday, stay safe.